Good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Today we're broadcasting live from the Minnesota Public Radio booth at the Minnesota State Fair. Thank you very much. This is the first day of the fair. The weather really is pretty good. It's a little cloudy, but it's very comfortable out here. Footlongs look like they are as tasty as ever. We hope to find out later. And we're happy to report that the folks who run our booth here at the fair have declared today Thrifty Day. So they put together a real nice selection of goodies that you can look at, and apparently the prices are right. Do make sure you stop by our booth sometime during the fair, because we have a drawing. If you fill out one of the slips of paper over here, you might win yourself a new car. $20,000 toward a new vehicle, courtesy of Luther Automobile Dealership. So give yourself a chance. Let's face it, there aren't millions of people who come to our booth, so the odds of you winning, not too bad, really. Well, this hour of Midday, we're going to focus on fighting crime and preventing crime. And joining us on stage, we might add, back by popular demand for at least the third straight year, two of Minnesota's top crime fighters, excuse me, Hennepin County Attorney Amy Klobuchar, Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner. When they were first elected, they became the first women to serve as county attorneys in Minnesota's two largest counties. Susan Gertner is now serving her third term. She's a member of the board of directors of the National District Attorneys Association and co-chair of the association's Cyber Crime Subcommittee. Amy Klobuchar is the president of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. She is serving her second term. Now, those of you here at the fair, if you have a question for the district attorneys on the criminal justice system, just come on up to the mic. Like to get your question on the air. Don't be shy. If you're listening on the radio or the web, give us a call. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Our toll-free number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And again, those of you here on the fairgrounds, just come on up to the mic. Susan Gertner, Amy Klobuchar, thanks for coming over today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Now, first of all, I was reading the story, I believe it was in the Star Tribune this morning, about the threatened cheating and the animal barns, potential animal fraud. Does this fall into your bailiwick? Are you two going to be over there this afternoon investigating?
We do have some undercover work going on right now. I shouldn't be saying that. But, you know, you're in Ramsey County. and so if this fraud is going on in the cow barns, we will ferret it out.
Uh-huh. And if ever any, it turned out to be some kind of an organized ring that came into Hennepin, you know, we'd be doing it jointly. But, you know, we're not going to reveal any of the investigation that may be happening.
I didn't know that animals actually, their nose, have nose prints as distinct as people's fingerprints. You learn something every day.
It's amazing.
Well, right out of the headlines, Green Party wants you folks to investigate the governor's job that he had while he was campaigning on the premise that there might be an illegal campaign contribution involved. Do you folks automatically, once you're asked to investigate something like this, plow right into it, or how does that work?
Well, under the law, we are required to investigate it, or we ourselves could be guilty of crimes. That's the way it works. And actually, we just got this in from the Green Party yesterday. It was addressed to Susan and myself, and we've looked at it briefly. I'm not sure there's a Hennepin County connection as much as some other counties involved, but I know that we'll make sure that someone investigates that we're required to do that.
Ripped from the headlines indeed, Gary, and as a matter of fact, in Ramsey County, we haven't even gotten this complaint yet, and so we'll take a look at it, but you raise an important issue, and that is whenever we have a case that involves election fraud, which this might involve, we have to investigate. It's unlike almost any other area of the law. We have an absolute obligation under the statute to investigate election law complaints. If we fail to do that, we can lose our jobs just like that. So it's a really somewhat peculiar area of the law that I think we should be taking a look at.
Now, the governor says he would welcome a fair and impartial investigation. Can you folks fairly and impartially investigate?
We're pretty good at that. That's part of our job. And I think, unlike some other jobs where you get elected, In our job, it's so important that we be fair. We've gotten cases involving Republicans, involving Democrats, and we are fair down the line, and we have veteran prosecutors in both our offices that look at these that have no political affiliations. And I think that's a very important principle for county attorneys across the state, that we look at the law and we look at the facts and we make decisions based on that.
Now, another story that I guess is not even in the headlines yet. We were reporting today, though, that perhaps later next week sometime, a lawsuit may be brought challenging, again, the constitutionality of Minnesota's sexual predator commitment law, specifically targeted at the governor's executive order saying that nobody, none of these guys are going to get out of prison or the hospital. Unless the courts order it. Is there any, in your mind, is there any legal basis for such a suit?
Well, not having seen it, I'm not going to speculate, but it's sure an interesting question, and I'm looking forward to sort of watching that action, hopefully from afar. Back in 1995 in Ramsey County, I personally handled the case of Dennis Linehan and got very, very immersed in the whole issue of sexual predators and sexual offenders and the sexually dangerous persons law. So it's an issue that I've followed now for almost a decade with a great deal of interest. And I was surprised, to tell you the truth, when Governor Pawlenty issued that executive order. And I'm not surprised that the people who represent the people who have been committed under the statute are crying foul. Now, whether they have a basis to do so remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Amy Klobuchar, what's your reading?
Well, Hennepin County, we have committed in the last few years over 100 people as sexual psychopaths or as mentally ill and dangerous. And so it's a tool that's used for overall, considering we have about 5,000 felony cases a year with a select group of people. And sometimes it's very helpful when, as in Susan's case that she was talking about, when a prison sentence is coming up, but this person can be a danger to themselves or others. But it is predicated on the idea that at some point, the way the law is, if through medication, through some kind of treatment, they're found to be not a danger to themselves or others, that there might be that possibility of release. The truth is, we have fought a number of releases successfully because we believe that they were still dangerous to themselves and others. But it's an interesting legal question, and like Susan, I'm not surprised that there's a lawsuit.
And one thing, Gary, good about a lawsuit being filed is that maybe these arguments can be made in a courtroom. These are legal issues, and I've always found that public safety and politics sometimes aren't a real good mix. So it'll be good to see this discussion being had in a courtroom.
One more question on that particular issue. From a non-legal standpoint, it does seem like, on the one hand, of course, you don't want dangerous people wandering around. On the other hand, it seems like the way the law is written, it's kind of a sham.
Tell us how you really feel about the law.
Well,
Gary.
It just seems like, I mean, the theory is, well, everybody's being treated, but then we're not really treating anybody, and so they're going to be there forever. Is there a different way to deal with this problem, which seems a little more forthright? Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm not going to say, Gary, I'm not going to agree that's a sham. From Ramsey County's perspective, our use of the law has been really, really targeted, and it really just applies to a very small group of people. The legal standards are very high. I mean, from my own personal experience, it takes a lot of evidence, a lot of bad conduct to get someone put away under the civil commitment statute. Someone like Dennis Linehan is what it takes. And so, and there isn't a sham involved. We're very upfront about it. The law is carefully drafted that if you meet these very strict standards, if you are really that dangerous, we're going to put you in a treatment facility. We are going to offer treatment. But then the shoe's on your foot to say, yes, I'm well, to prove I'm well. And the public safety demands nothing short of that.
I guess I was referring more to the idea of how they get out.
Well, there are standards, and doctors can make that determination. And as we talked about, it's made in a court of law. I do think you have to also look back to how it used to be 20 years ago when Minnesota had very liberal release laws for sexual offenders. You look at someone like Donald Blum, he had committed several very serious rapes, tying women up, raping them. And at the time, the philosophy was give a little treatment and let them out. And he was put out on the street and went on to kill Katie Poyer. Since then, the legislature has realized that we do need some longer sentences in those type of rape cases, and that's been helpful. And we have seen some reduction in the number of the commitments that we've had because of the fact that we're able to use those longer sentences for some of the serious sexual offenders. We now can get, for someone who has, we had one guy who raped someone in Florida, raped someone in California, came to Minnesota, raped a woman in the Bloomington TGIF parking lot, and as he was doing it, he said, "Do what I say, I know what I'm doing, I've done this before." If that's not an example of a career offender, I don't know what is. In that case, we're able to use a new law, get a what is essentially a life sentence, 30-year sentence against him. And I think that with those types of laws, it makes it less of a focus on some of the commitments.
We're talking this hour with two of Minnesota's top county attorneys. Susan Gertner is here. She's the Ramsey County Attorney. Amy Klobuchar is with us, Hennepin County Attorney. Two biggest counties in Minnesota. They have come by today to talk about some of the issues and facing people in the criminal justice system, people observing the criminal justice system. If you'd like to join our conversation, come on up here to the mic. If you're listening on the phone, give us a call. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Our toll-free number is 1-800-242-2828. Mike, your question, please.
Thank you. My question is, with the new conceal and carry law, do you think that's going to lead to more citizens' arrest, and what are the ramifications of that if that happens?
All right. Who wants to start on concealed carry?
Well,
Amy?
I'll just plunge right in. I've heard that the fair actually has signs up. I saw something on TV last night that I've heard that's a little controversial with some people. I'm not certain it'll lead to more arrests. The concern from a law enforcement standpoint that the police and the sheriffs and some county attorneys like ourselves have been talking about is the concern that these guns, as they're out on the streets more, as they're locked up in cars, can get into the wrong hands. They can be stolen. They can get into kids' hands. We've had a number of cases where, we had one case where a 3-year-old takes a gun from a 17-year-old's pocket and a 7-year-old shoots a 4-year-old who luckily wasn't killed. Those are the kind of cases we see. So that's one concern. I think there's going to be some litigation over it. There already is with the churches, synagogues, talking about the fact that they want to have the ability to say no guns in their facilities. There's clearly some changes that need to be made to that law. Our counties, as well as a number of cities and counties throughout the state, have used some legal theories to say we're going to be able to ban weapons in our facilities, our hospitals, our libraries, regardless of that law, and those may be challenged. But I think just to think that this law didn't think about things like the Hennepin County Hospital, the medical center, that is one of the busiest emergency rooms in the state, where the doctors are treating gunshot wounds every day, where the nurses and doctors are very concerned about that kind of thing. I'd kind of like to listen to them on a local level instead of what some of the lobbyists were saying over at the legislature. And they are telling us we don't want to have guns in our hospital. They're telling that to our county commissioners. And so I think there'll be more litigation and hopefully some changes to that law.
Susan Gardner.
In Ramsey County so far, we haven't had nearly the permit applications that we expected. And so I think it'll be interesting to see really what happens with this law. Has it really changed the landscape? We're obviously concerned about gun violence. It's been a very important priority in my office for years now. And it'll be interesting to see if, in fact, more guns on the streets, more permits, that kind of thing translates into increased violence. What I think is good about the law, I mean, there's a lot about the law that wasn't carefully crafted, that's raised more questions than it's answered. But a good piece of the law is the reporting requirement. The legislature is going to get a report every year that gets at important issues like who's getting these permits, are they committing any further crimes, that kind of thing. So we'll have some data, and I think data will be good. One piece of it that is a little disturbing, though, I'll tell you, is what it's kind of done to our culture. I was at a bat mitzvah in Minneapolis on Sunday at Temple Israel, which is a beautiful facility, and to walk up those stone steps to this beautiful house of worship and see this big sign that says guns not allowed here, is very discordant, and it makes me kind of wonder what we're doing here.
Amy Klobuchar,
and I think this, the line of information, which Susan was referring to, one thing that you'd like to see is the serial numbers on the guns, so we can track them that way. And under the law, we're not allowed to keep those. I think there's a number of changes that can be made. And I think sometimes the debate gets focused on, oh, the people getting permits are going to commit crimes. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. I think law enforcement concern is just that they're going to get in the wrong hands, and that also, as Susan noted, there's going to be a cultural shift in our how kids think about guns and how we all do in our culture.
I was going to say, because the argument you hear, the other side of this, is if a person is, you know, a good law-abiding citizen and not a criminal of any sort, and they go through the process, they get their permit, why shouldn't they be allowed to carry their weapon at the state fair or wherever they're going? I mean, they're not going to go run around and shoot people.
Well, the obvious argument against that, Gary, is that just the more guns you have out there, the more situations where guns are present, the more likely it is that someone's going to get hurt. I mean, we've all seen statistics about how if you have a gun in your home, the chances of you being the victim of a shooting are greater than, far greater than you using that gun successfully in self-defense. So it's just an issue of the more they're out there, even sitting in your car in a parking lot, it could get stolen, just like Amy said. I mean, it's a concern, and I think we have to watch it.
I remember when Ann Richards was governor of Texas. This is her story, not mine, so if get mad at her. But I thought it was funny. She said they came to her and said, you got to sign this bill because it's going to be so great for women. They can protect themselves by carrying these guns around. They can put the gun in the purse. And she looked at the lobbyist and said, I'm sorry, but have you ever seen inside a Texas woman's purse? You think she's going to be able to get that gun out? I don't think so. So I just think that people have to keep this in perspective about when they use that gun, and they should think about this. It could easily be used against them. And again, our focus out of our office and all the county attorneys across the state has been to keep guns out of the hands of criminals, keep guns out of the hands of kids, enforce those laws. We've had a major emphasis on enforcing the felon in possession of a gun. If you're convicted of a serious crime and you're found out there with a gun, 5-year mandatory minimum sentence. And every year, that's our first goal, is to enforce that law and work with the U.S. Attorney's Office on it. And I think it's made some headway, and we're going to continue to do that.
If you just joined us, this is Midday. We're broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Fair. First day of the fair, we're at the booth, the Minnesota Public Radio booth, located near the corner of Judson and Nelson. Our guests this hour, Hennepin County Attorney Amy Klobuchar, Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner. They're here to take your questions on crime-related issues. If you have one, those of you here in the audience, come on up to the mic. If you're listening on the radio, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Alex, your question, please.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
I am calling
in reference to these fraudulent going out of business sales that go around the state. And, you know, it's the auctions that come to hotels. They have items confiscated from U.S. Customs, or lengthy going out of business sales, furs, jewelry, oriental rugs. I've contacted on many occasions the Attorney General's office, and they finally mentioned that this is more related to the Hennepin County Attorney's office, and that due to budget costs and short of staffing, it's not on the list of their priorities to operate, you know, to investigate these matters. Is this something that falls into the lap of the Hennepin County Attorney, and what can be done about it? Thank you so much.
Amy Klobuchar?
Well, everything ultimately falls in my lap, but this is something I first want to point out. I always tell high school kids this. If you've seen that show Law and Order, you know how in the first half of the show the police investigate the crimes, and the second half the prosecutors bring the cases. Well, we're not on the first half. We're on the second half of the show. So we can't really go out there and try to drum up business, nor do we want to. Cases come to us from law enforcement. And when I get back to the office, I will check to see if we've received some of the cases that you've described. I know that I have not been discussing that with our white-collar team. That's where they would come. I haven't heard about those cases. And some of that, speaking of the Attorney General's office, could be a regulatory matter with how you price things and what's going on. So we'll also contact them. And you can call our office, sir. I'll give you the number. Give me about 2 days. It's 612-348-5550 and ask for me. And hopefully someone will tell you what I found out about these types of cases. I wanted to talk more broadly, though, about white-collar crime in general. This has been a growing area of business for local prosecutors' offices, especially ours. Part of it is the economy. When you've got problems in the economy, people want to keep their standard of living high, and they're going to do that if that means stealing or not. Some of it is the fact that less sophisticated crooks are using sophisticated means to commit crimes. They used to use a crowbar, now they use a computer. And part of it is the U.S. Attorney's Office has been working with our office, and we're doing some cases jointly or taking them on themselves. And I'm really proud of the work our office has done. We're 14 and 14 for these complicated jury trials, white-collar cases for the past year. Things like tax evasion with the Northwest Airlines pilots, former Judge Amundson, who took $400,000 from a mentally retarded woman. Those are the kinds of cases that we're getting, and they take more sophisticated police to work on them as well as prosecutors. And I just think you're going to see more and more local prosecutors doing that case, and that means training and that means resources. But if we're going to have a good system of justice, we have to have one that applies to the rich and powerful, people that can steal from businesses or can use business means to steal, as it should apply to people who steal cars out on the street.
White-collar crime, a big issue in Ramsey County as well?
Very much so. It's a big issue in the sense that they're tougher cases. They're tougher cases to investigate. They're tougher cases to prosecute. They take a lot of resources. But by the same token, we need to, and we do, prioritize them. Crooks such as Carl Bushmaker, who we charged recently with stealing almost $200,000 from various elderly people who are incapacitated, can't handle their own finances. I mean, if he's going to get away with it, then the whole system is in trouble. So we really do need to emphasize white-collar crooks. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt, and I can't say the quote exactly, but it's one of my favorites. Anybody can rob a train, but you give a man education, he can steal the whole damn train. And so, I mean, that's what we need to focus on, is people who have the abilities to do something productive in society, but instead they use their wiles and their education, their training, to steal from people. And we need to pay attention to that, and we do.
It would seem, again, as an outsider, it would seem like some successful prosecutions in some of these areas would have maybe more of a deterrent effect than it would with street crime, only insofar as most so-called white-collar criminals aren't eager to go off to the Hooskow. Am I right about that?
That's exactly right. In fact, one Northwest Airlines pilot told me that the articles about our seven convictions in all seven pilot cases were put up in pilots' lounges all across the country, because there have been a number of other prosecutions in other states, but not ones that resulted in incarceration like ours did. And our argument there was, you know, they took out post office boxes in Florida and Texas, and had million-dollar houses here in the Twin Cities. And unless they're the size of Stuart Little, I don't think they lived in those post office boxes. They were living here in their homes, and they did it deliberately. And it's together stole over $500,000 from Minnesota taxpayers. And when we first brought that case, people would say, well, maybe it was a mistake. And, you know, they never say that about a drug dealer or an auto thief, but they tend to want to give white-collar offenders, because they have jobs that are respected, because they're known in the community. I think that people tend to want to give them a break and tend to feel more sorry for them because of the fall from grace. But again, if you don't enforce those cases, if you don't go and enforce the law down the line, you're going to have a system of justice that no one's ever going to believe in.
Kristen, your question, please.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. By the way, I want to just comment that I applaud you you on the addressing the white-collar crime issue. I also want to applaud you for addressing the truancy issue, because I really think that this is really, if you really want to address the growing crime in our society, we have to look at truancy. That is really a that's so important. Okay. So thank you, Amy.
Oh, well, Susan has actually done a lot with it, too. I think both our offices. I don't think you find many major big city DAs where truancy is one of the top priorities, and for both of us it is. I'll have her talk about what she's done. But in our case, we have worked to have our lawyers, actually, we started a team that works on this. They go to the schools, focus on early intervention with giving lectures. We've done videos with Target's help. We've put some videos out there with kids in them talking about what's happening. And then we've sped up the court process because I think I was on NPR once about this a few years ago, and someone called in and said, this sounds so draconian that you're trying to get these, making these kids go to school and that you can take their driver's license away if they don't. I love taking my daughter out of school, she said. I go to concerts, I go to plays with her. And I finally said, let's get real. These kids are not at the Guthrie. That is not where they are, where they're missing school. And if we turn our backs on them as a community and say, we don't care, it's okay if you don't go to school, we are basically turning our backs on their lives and saying, you don't matter. You don't matter like my own kids. It doesn't matter to me that you're not in school. And what we've been doing is working with the schools to make sure that they're taking attendance. Believe it or not, that wasn't always happening. Early intervention and then speeding up the court process. It's not a crime, but they can be shaken up a bit by having driver's license taken away, sentenced to serve, those kinds of things.
Susan Gertner, you have been working on this for quite some while. Is it made any difference? I mean, it still seems like getting kids to go to school is a big problem.
It is a problem, but we have made a substantial dent in the problem, particularly in St. Paul. This is our ninth school year of our truancy intervention program. We've had about 15,000 kids go through the program. Of those kids, 75% have improved their school attendance. But we had some other real significant indications that we're making a difference, and that is the graduation rates in the St. Paul School District have improved fairly dramatically over the last 5 years, and the school administrators in St. Paul will tell you that a big part of that success is the truancy intervention program of the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. And, you know, that kind of partnership really can make a difference. I think it's been very important to send the message that the same office that prosecutes the drive-by shooting that happened down the street is going to sit you down and say, you know, it's the law. Your child has to be in school, and we care. The prosecutor's office cares. We think that approach has made a big difference.
Mm-hmm. James, your question, please.
My question is for Mrs. Klobuchar. If the state of Minnesota has a no self-defense law, then what does everybody need guns for?
Well, I think we've talked a little bit about the gun issue before, but there's nothing to ban people from having guns in Minnesota. People use guns for hunting, for sports, and there's nothing wrong with that. As an extension of that now, the legislature has found, which they actually had before, that you could carry guns when you go out on any place you want to go unless it's banned. And that always has been the case, but what this law did was shift the burden. It used to be that the local police chief would make a decision based on his own views of public safety risk about whether or not someone could have a gun. And now it's more of an assumption that you can have a concealed carry permit unless you don't meet certain requirements. So it's made it easier to get those permits. We talked about earlier about how there's good arguments that the gun is more likely to be used against you if you have it. But nevertheless, the law of this state is that you can carry these guns out.
What is the biggest single crime problem that each of you face? Susan Gertner in Ramsey County, if you had to pick one?
It depends on what you mean big. Obviously, gang violence is an issue in every large town. I say town because I'm from St. Paul, and it's just a big, small town. In every city, major city, gang violence is a problem, and it tends to get a lot of headlines. White-collar crime is, as we talked about before, a huge issue for my office because we do want to do a good job in that area. Drunken driving now, multiple DWIs is an issue we're very concerned about. But I guess I would have to say, now, I've been a prosecutor almost 20 years, and I've seen crime trends come and go, but domestic violence, I think, remains one of the issues that I'm most concerned about. It's very prevalent, and as much education and resources that we put into the issue, it still goes on, I'm afraid, every day in the homes across our community.
No noticeable improvement in that area.
No noticeable improvement, but you can take that either way. On the one hand, the numbers might not be going down, but does that mean that there's still as much of it, or does it mean that we've got a culture now where it's acceptable to pick up the phone and call for help? There are resources out there for people who are escaping violent homes. Maybe that's why the numbers haven't really gone down. It's because we're getting at more of those harmful situations. It's hard to know.
Amy Klobuchar, biggest single crime problem in Hennepin County.
Well, when you look at it, if you're talking about homicides, things like that, you clearly look at the combination of the guns, gangs, drugs. So many of the homicides are related to drugs, drug sales gone bad, things like that. A major issue. But when I look at it more as a bigger picture, and I've talked about the white collar, so I won't focus on that, but as I look at the bigger picture, my concern is more the juveniles and what we need to do to make sure that they're not getting involved in crime. When we looked at our numbers this year, we continue, unlike the rest of the country, to be fairly stable in our crime rate. We took a big dip down, and a lot of suburban areas as well in crime, but right now we're kind of steady. But the kids getting involved in crime, we had an increase in juveniles with guns in our office this year, the kind of cases we're seeing. And that's what I see as a long trend concern is kids who aren't graduating, who are getting involved in crime, and we need to think as a community better ways to work with these kids, because otherwise we're going to be paying for it on the other end.
You know, Gary, I think the real answer to what is the most important crime issue is the crime that happened to you. I remember not too long ago being at a national night out experience, going from neighborhood to neighborhood, and expected to be asked questions about the latest homicide or this and that. And of course, everyone wanted to talk about the bikes that have been stolen out of their garage or from the corner drugstore recently. So it's really, it just depends on what's impacting you and your community. And that's why we try to focus on individual communities and what their crime problems are.
A lot of those livability crimes do involve kids, and we've got this community prosecution initiative where we have lawyers assigned to different neighborhoods, to Bloomington or Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, so that they handle that geographic area and they get to know the kids in the neighborhood at the schools, they get to know what the problems are. And that kind of livability crime focus helps with the violent crime as well, because if you can get that under control, then you see a decrease in violent crime because people feel better about their community. They're out walking on the streets. They're putting up new buildings. They're painting their houses, and you're going to see a decrease in violent crime. And that's a lot of what's been going on in the metropolitan area in the last few years.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, after the latest shooting in the Jordan neighborhood, we ended up doing, over the course of a week or so, a program with Minneapolis City Council member Don Samuels, Minneapolis Police Chief Robert Olson, Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback, about different things. But in each program, the issue of the revolving door came up, and all three expressed great concern that judges are, the police take the bad guys off the street. They go downtown, they're back on the street later that day, and the cycle goes on and on and on and on, and all three were wondering, what the heck is going on? Why is this occurring? Is this a big problem for you folks?
Well, maybe I should answer that, since you're asking specifically in the context of Jordan, and maybe
I'm happy to join in.
Did sound like it might extend beyond the borders of Hennepin County.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, dealing in particular with the Summit University area in St. Paul, the Frogtown area of St. Paul, on the positive side, we have neighbors, we have block groups or block clubs and community groups that are intensely interested in making a difference in their community. And that has a lot of value. But they express the same concern that you talked about in terms of Jordan, is people being out on the street. But to point fingers at the judges, I don't necessarily think is particularly productive, because the judges have sentencing guidelines that they need to comply with, laws that the legislators create, and an obvious issue of prison overcrowding. And what I wished had happened during this debate about, are we going to raise taxes, are we going to hold the line on this and that, is to talk a little bit about the impact on the criminal justice system of not generating tax revenue. Because the fact is, we have a finite amount of prison space, We have to make judgments about what we do with that prison space. And when you're living in a neighborhood and someone's dealing drugs on your corner, you want that person in prison for forever. Mm-hmm. But whose place are they going to take in that prison system?
Well, that, and I agree with much of what Susan said, but I do think we do need to have individual accountability for judges. And part of that is being able to know what happened. And one of our concerns right now from the County Attorneys Association is there's some movement to get rid of transcripts from plea agreements and from sentencings. And we think there should be easy accessibility, immediate accessibility to those transcripts, that it makes a difference in the system if people have easy accessibility to what's going on. And one of the things we've also started this year, it's going to start September 1st, very soon, is ability of neighborhood groups to submit income impact statements in cases about what's happening in their neighborhood, how gun crime or how drugs are affecting their neighborhood, so we can bring them in. They can do this over our web. It's www.hennepinattorney.org, and our lawyers can bring them into court with them, so the judges get a sense. So often it's just our prosecutor and the defendant and the defendant's lawyer, and they get a sense of what this crime means in a particular neighborhood.
Peter, your question, please.
Yes, I was interested in each of the county attorneys' perspective on the value of restorative justice initiatives in their neighborhoods.
Okay, Susan Gertner, you want to start with that? You were just heard on the national program Justice Talking, which we broadcast here a couple of weeks ago on this subject.
Yes, and it was a very interesting experience. You could talk about restorative justice for hours and hours and hours, but I will try to keep my answer to Peter's question short. Restorative justice is a concept that it's fairly hard to define, and to use a very concrete example that Peter suggested, we have been using neighborhood impact statements in particularly drug cases now for a number of years, and that's a way of expressing to the court how the court can restore the community by doing something about the crime and the impact it's had on the community. We think of drug cases as victimless. In fact, they're not. So using these victim impact statements like we've been doing for the last few years is part of a restorative justice effort. And there are many, many examples of restorative justice efforts in Ramsey County that are going on and are very, very valuable. One of my concerns, though, is resources. And I made that real clear in the National Public Radio show. It's very, very time intensive to get out of the traditional justice system and handle things in a different way. It has value, but we can't do it alone. I recently actually preached the sermon in church on Sunday morning in my community about restorative justice. And I told the congregation, we need you. We need volunteers. We need the faith community to step up to the plate and help with these restorative justice efforts, because the demands on the criminal justice system are so great. Again, we can't do it alone.
Amy Klobuchar.
We've had some good results with it, with some of our lower level crimes, lower level felony crimes, where the neighborhoods have individually started groups of people where you send the case to them and they decide what the punishment should be. Interpret all of our brochures into Spanish so we can give them to other people in the neighborhood that don't know English, things like that. And I think that it's been successful. They've got some good success rates, and I hope it continues. We have a community court in Hennepin County headed up by Judge Hopper, and he uses that a lot, refers these cases to them, and that's part of our community prosecution effort. So I think it can be very helpful in finding individual solutions, maybe not, you know, fixing the fence in the house that you destroyed. A lot of people may not want that person to come back, but in a more global way to look at a neighborhood and have them go do sentence to serve back in that neighborhood to fix it. And we found it to be a good thing.
We're talking this hour with Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner, Hennepin County Attorney Amy Klobuchar, broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Fair, first day of the fair. And if you are coming out to the fair, make sure you stop by our public radio booth. We're near the corner of Judson and Nelson, right across from the high diving board. Those of you who are milling about out here in our audience, make sure you sign up, win yourself a new car. Somebody will win $20,000 toward a new vehicle, courtesy of Luther Automobile Dealers. Might as well give yourself a chance.
They're lining up.
And I wish I could enter. I can't. Maybe you'll give me a ride. By the way, we've not a lot of time left, but if you have a question for the county attorneys, come on up to the mic here. If you're listening on the radio, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Go ahead, ma'am.
I want to know why the Hennepin County judges, but I'm sure it probably applies to other counties as well, are allowed to abdicate so far away from the sentencing guidelines for many of the violent crimes for which people are arrested for in the inner city neighborhoods.
Thank you. This is one of our neighborhood activists here that's helping us with Court Watch and other things to make sure that we are monitoring the judges. The way the law works is that judges can depart downward from the sentencing guidelines, but they have to have reasons to do that. One of the reasons is amenability to probation, which is a very broad reason, and it's used a lot over our objection. I do think that, as Susan mentioned before, that's one thing that we need to look at and make sure we hold judges accountable. But there is other things as well in terms of making sure we have enough police officers out on the streets. To me, that's a way to prevent crime, instead of looking at this end of the system, to make sure that they're out there, because that prevents so many crimes because people just don't have the opportunity to commit them. Working with the youth, other things. So it's a combination of solutions. I don't think you can just look at one thing.
In Ramsey County, any problems with judges too often departing from the guidelines?
Well, particularly in the drug area, we've been watching that very closely. I think that there's some resistance to the notion that someone who commits a drug offense should go to prison, and so we're keeping an eye on that. But each case does need to be treated differently, and I haven't seen a great pattern of departures by the judges in Ramsey County. But I think accountability is important. I think any opportunity the community has to pay attention to what the judges are doing, to do the community impact statements, maybe to come and watch, can only make them do a better job.
In general, are too many relatively low-level or people charged and convicted on relatively low-level drug offenses? Too many of those people getting incarcerated, given the limited prison space we have?
Sometimes I think that there's kind of a misunderstanding of some of that, because in our state, to go to prison, you pretty much have to be dealing. You have to have a lot of drugs. You might go to the workhouse. Our laws are different than some other states, certainly different than the federal guidelines that you've heard about, where people can go for lengthy, lengthy prison sentences. So I don't see that as much of an issue as making sure we have the resources for treatment. The best thing we can do is to keep them out of there in the first place. Our drug court is very much focused on treatment in Hennepin County. A lot of people are coming in looking at it from other places. Second thing is a number of these low-level offenders can have mental health problems. We're developing a mental health court in Hennepin County that I'm really excited about, where we look at some of these low-level offenders and say, okay, if we can keep them on their meds by some incentive for them, because they don't want to go to jail, and if we can keep them on their meds, make them check in every day to take their medication, that's going to be a lot cheaper than keeping them in and out of jail. So we're looking at those kinds of things as well. And again, accountability to make sure that the results, what the judges are doing, what our office is doing, is known to the public.
I would agree that the problem is not a lot of low-level offenders getting into prison. In fact, you talk to the community, and their concern is exactly the opposite, that what the system calls low-level offenders really are damaging the fabric of their community and should be going to prison, and they're not. So I think the frustration more flows in that direction. The kinds of people that go to prison, as Amy touched on, are the real serious offenders. For example, we've seen a big increase in the amount of people going away for methamphetamine labs, and of course they are very, very dangerous enterprises that can put communities and particularly children at risk when they're cooking up methamphetamine.
Susan Gertner, I think it's fair to say you raised a few eyebrows the other day. You wrote a column in the for the Star Tribune suggesting it's time to take a look at enhanced penalties for people who are charged with homicides when children are the victims. And, of course, there were two tragic cases in Ramsey County this summer involving mothers and children who were killed. So, what kind of response did you get to that?
Well, raising eyebrows, Gary, that's what I do, and I do it well. you got to have some fun now and then. But there was nothing fun, of course, about dealing with the issue of the children in our community. And I do think that we should talk about the sentences that should be given for people who kill very, very young children. And obviously that came up because of the two recent homicides in Ramsey County. And I think, again, it's legitimate to raise the question, what are our society's values? There's all kinds of provisions in the law that put enhanced penalties on certain kinds of murders, like, for example, drive-by shooting. We made a decision as a society a few years back that gang violence was a serious issue, and so we're going to have enhanced penalties if you commit an intentional crime in the murder in the course of a drive-by shooting. All I'm saying is, should we think about if you kill a two-year-old, if you kill a four-year-old who has absolutely no way to defend themselves, no way to protect themselves, maybe that's a top-notch crime that deserves top-notch penalties.
But is there enough protection? Are there enough protections built into the law so that if, for example, a mother is charged, convicted with killing their child, that, you know, if there's a mental problem there, that that would somehow be recognized?
Well, that you raise an important issue, and my discussion of this issue has been very narrow, and that is, what should be the penalty if, after the court process happens, after the person raises all the defenses they're entitled to do, if we prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt, if and only if we get to that point, what should be the penalty? And that's the only question I'm raising. I'm not suggesting at this point that we change our standards for who's convicted, that we change our standards for who's mentally ill. I'm not suggesting any of that. I'm just looking to the very end of the process and saying, is the penalty enough?
Amy Klobuchar?
We've had a few cases where people have killed children. We've been able, for the ones that we feel deserved it, have been able to get lengthy sentences, 50 years against a guy that had a history of child abuse and then threw a child against the wall and killed this little baby. And I found those existing laws to be pretty good that we were able to use. We've had one or two where they were found not guilty by reason of insanity. And I guess my bigger concern from some of those cases, and I don't want to go in the facts of Susan's case, but when you look at the one mother who had this, was clearly under this stress of this baby that she had this feeding schedule, was doing, is how you get those people help so it doesn't go there. And the first thing I thought of, just from a Minnesota basis, is an organization called PACER for Parents of Children with Disabilities. And when my daughter was born, and she's great now, but she couldn't swallow, and we went through that feeding schedule for a year and a half with tubes and things like that. And it is, unless you have a tremendous support of a family, it is a very difficult thing. And I have so much respect for these parents that go through this in terms of the patience and the love and the perseverance. And so to look at that as a solution of getting help for people when they're in this and realizing how difficult it is, I think is one approach that we need to take as a society when we see those cases.
Road rage. Now, are the laws sufficiently, well, are the laws sufficient to deal with serious cases of road rage?
I think they are, where we just charged two people with criminal vehicular homicide. They were going down the road, swerving into each other, playing a game of chicken, as one person said, throwing screwdrivers out the window. One passenger died. They both got charged. I think those existing laws, we've been able to charge them with criminal vehicular homicide. We just had the boat rage case, and that one we found was a tragic accident. And I'll never forget one of your colleagues, a reporter, saying to me, but for 2 months we've been saying it's boat rage. What are we going to say tonight? And I said, well, you can still say it's boat rage. It just wasn't homicidal boat rage. And I think that's so much of a important part of what Susan and I do in our jobs, is to kind of filter through what an immediate reaction is to a crime and make sure that in the end the facts come out and that we're charging it the right way.
Susan Gertner?
Well, road rage hasn't been a big issue in Ramsey County, to tell you the truth, and I'm kind of surprised by that.
Are you going to say it's the small town with the big... Then I have to go, well, we're a big town with a big city.
I don't know. Maybe it's Minneapolis traffic versus St. Paul traffic. I'm not sure, but we've had a few cases, but I agree with Amy that I think the laws are adequate. Road rage is really not unique from a criminal justice perspective, in the sense that if you get mad at someone and try to hurt them, it's a crime. It always has been, whether you're in a car, in a boat, you know, at a bar, on the street, in the park, whatever. So we found the laws adequate, and I think it's almost more a social phenomenon than it is necessarily a legal phenomenon.
Mike, quick question before we wrap up, please. Mike?
To just comment on the impact that faith-based programs like Minnesota Teen Challenge are having on offenders that have life-controlling addictions, and then the impact to the community once these guys get squared away. Thank you.
This is Amy Klobuchar, and we have used Teen Challenge. A lot of people are referred there out of our drug court, and we've seen some really good results, as we have from other programs that aren't faith-based. But I think there's clearly room for that, and we've been pleased with some of the results that we've seen with younger people that have gotten out of their drug addiction from that program, as well as others.
Susan Garrett.
In Ramsey County, they just recently got a federal grant to do some very extensive faith-based work with the St. Paul Area Council of Churches, and they're going to be looking, obviously, at juvenile offenders and helping them out as really across the board, assisting victims and assisting people who are impacted by crime, and it's a very exciting initiative.
Now, can I tell you my favorite event at the State Fair?
Sure.
My favorite event at the State Fair is the Ladies Lead, so I'm recommending that everyone go see it. This is where women knit sweaters from the wool of their sheep for themselves and their sheep in matching colors. And then they go around the circle and walk around with their sheep, and then there's an award winner. So I don't know what day it is, but I've seen it, and it's quite stupendous. So I highly recommend it to your listeners, Gary.
Gary's sort of looking at me like, what are you going to say? And I just can't top that. I'm just going to rush right there, I have to say.
Maybe we can go together.
That sounds big. Yep, sounds big.
I did want to ask each of you before we quit here, and we've unfortunately only got a minute or so, but both of you have to deal with the fairly sordid side of life. How do you keep yourself from getting cynical, jaded, just, you know, people are terrible?
Well, for me, this is Amy, it's just the perspective I have with my family. And when the day that we lost that Kirby Puckett case, which we knew was difficult going into it, I was with the victim, was very upset. Our lawyer, who did a great job, all this media stuff, I got home. I said to my husband, we're having dinner with my 8-year-old daughter, and I said, I just can't believe this day. I started to actually feel sorry for myself for a few minutes. And at this point, my daughter says, Mom, we don't have time to hear about your job tonight. This is a very important night. This is a night we were going to have the family discussion of whether I have one hamster or two. And so, you know, that kind of put things in perspective, and I think it helps me with my job, as well as seeing the courage of the victims that come into a room full of strangers in the jury room, tell their stories, to see these kids that have to go through what they did. And it really puts things that our jobs are not that hard when you see what they go through.
Susan Garrett.
Well, I have to echo family, like Amy said, faith, and I run quite a bit. And I just have to say, on Saturday I ran a race, and I took third place in my age group.
Excellent.
And which I was very excited about. I have a white ribbon. Thank you. Now, it may well be that there are only three women in my age group in that race, but you know, the world belongs to those who show up.
And you had the other two arrested,
well,
didn't
no.
you?
Shh. You weren't supposed to tell that.
We're out of time, but thank you so much for coming back. Can we get you back next year?
Of course.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much.
It's my excuse to eat a footlong.
Thank you.
Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner, Hennepin County Attorney Amy Klobuchar joining us on this first day of the Minnesota State Fair. I'd like to thank all of you who've been in our audience today. And if you have not stopped by yet, not had a chance to, make sure you come by our booth, Minnesota Public Radio booth at the State Fair near the corner of Judson and Nelson. That's it for our midday program today. Tomorrow, we're going to talk with the Education Commissioner, and I hope you can tune in.
All right, thank you, Gary. It's a minute before 1 o'clock now. Don't forget, it's Thrifty Thursday at the NPR booth at the fair, with some special bargains to be had on Minnesota Public Radio merchandise. 1 week from today, join Lorna Benson and yours truly, Stephen John, for a special demonstration of Minnesota Public Radio's new interactive journalism. Stay tuned. Talk of the Nation is coming up next here on 91.1 KNOW, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Mostly cloudy skies, 77 degrees in the Twin Cities. Not nearly as sticky. In fact, almost an opposite kind of a day today, with some clouds blocking out that blazing sun. Seasonable temperature right around 82 degrees this afternoon in the Twin Cities. Clear skies tonight with lows in the upper 50s. Should be sunny tomorrow with a high around 82, and the weekend partly cloudy with highs in the mid-80s both Saturday and Sunday. 77 degrees now in the Twin Cities. It's coming up on 1 o'clock.